within a large palace.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 7, Chapter 15, Instructions for Civilized Human Beings, Text 36. Yaha Yah Pravrijya Grihat Purvam Trivargavapanat Punaha Yadi Sevet Tan Bhikshu Savaivanta Shapatrapaha. And purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: One who accepts the sannyas order gives up the three principles of materialistic activities in which one indulges in the field of household life, namely religion, economic development, and sense gratification. One who first accepts sannyas but then returns to such materialistic activities is to be called a vantashi, or one who eats his own vomit. He is indeed a shameless person. Purport: Materialistic activities are regulated by the institution of varnashram dharma. Without varnashram dharma, materialistic activities constitute animal life. Yet, even in human life, while observing the principles of varna and ashram, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas, one must ultimately accept Sannyas, the renounced order. For only by the renounced order can one be situated in Brahma Sukha, or transcendental bliss. In Brahma Sukha, one is no longer attracted by lusty desires. Indeed, when one is no longer disturbed, especially by lusty desires for sexual indulgence, he is fit to become a sannyasi. Otherwise, one should not accept the sannyas order. If one accepts sannyas at an immature stage, there is every possibility of his being attracted by women and lusty desires, and thus again becoming a so-called grihastha, or a victim of women. Such a person is most shameless, and he is called a vantashi, or one who eats that which he has already vomited. He certainly leads a condemned life. In our Krishna consciousness movement, it is advised, therefore, that the sannyasis and brahmacharis keep strictly aloof from the association of women, so that there will be no chance of their falling down again as victims of lusty desires. It's a quite a strong passage for the first thing in the morning. But anyway, Srimad Bhagavatam is not meant simply to make our mind comfortable. Sometimes it is necessary for the mind to become extremely uncomfortable so that we can realize the truth which is higher than that which gives us comfort for the mind. The mind has its tendencies to go wandering in the material sphere seeking for gratification. And here we are strictly warned against the perils of that. The entire Vedic system is designed in such a way that there is gradual progress in the matter of renunciation. As a brahmachari, one is expected to be trained in the principles of renunciation. In grihastha ashram, one lives a life of controlled sense gratification. Having been properly trained in the principles of renunciation while being a brahmachari, and continuing that spirit of internal renunciation, eventually, at a certain age, scriptures say 50, panchashordvam vanam vrajet, one accepts retired life, one enters the forest, and then one prepares for complete renunciation, which is the life of sannyas. So the idea is that the living entity in the material world is completely attached to the objects, the people, and the pleasures and phenomena of this world. And so long as the jiva is attached here, he cannot ultimately go back to the spiritual world. So the principle of renunciation or detachment is very important for any human being to cultivate and develop. Because renunciation is something that we have all experienced life after life at the time of death. The only difference is that at death it's a forceful renunciation. We are forced to be detached from everything we are attached to. So the Vedic system advises us to become detached in a gentlemanly way, in a decent way, when the going is good. Leave when the going is good. Not that you have to be pulled out, kicking and thrashing, protesting, and then we are forced to go. So Vedic life is meant to teach us the art of dignified exit from this material world. And it teaches us the art of becoming detached. That is the whole meaning of the sannyas order. Being the highest order, it is the order that draws respect from all the ashrams and all the varnas also. At the same time, in this life, in this age of Kali, it is extremely difficult for a person to practice real sannyas. As Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Janaha Abhadraha Gunaha. The people in this age are very much afflicted by lusty desires, by sinful desires. They have propensities that are not in keeping with a pure life. So by nature, people in Kali Yuga are more materialistic, more lusty, more sinful, more greedy, and so on. And therefore, to expect that the general mass of people will practice a life of gradual, progressive of renunciation and ultimate come to the sannyas order is a difficult idea. What to speak of themselves taking sannyas? When people see others leading a life of renunciation, they try to dissuade them as well. And they criticize them as well. So this is, even those who actually are born in Bharatvarsha, which is the land of spiritual culture, sometimes those who are born in the land of, or in a family that is supposedly Brahminical, very cultured, they also strongly oppose principles of renunciation. Because the idea is that one should live comfortably in this world and enjoy life to the fullest. And if at all one is religious, then religion is a means of sense gratification or living comfortably in this world. Rather than understanding that ultimately religion is meant for release from this world, they use religion as a vehicle for furthering the bondage in this world. Therefore, for Kali Yuga, the Shastras actually speaking prohibit sannyas. Ashvamedha gavalambham sannyasam palapaitrikam devarena sutotpattim kalopancha vivarjayet. So these five things are prohibited in Kali Yuga. Ashvamedha, there is a horse sacrifice. Gavalambham, cow sacrifice. Sannyasam, the taking of sannyas. Palapaitrikam, the offering of meat to one's forefathers in the Shraddha. Devarena suta utpatti. Devarena means the husband's brother, the brother-in-law. Having a child created from the brother-in-law. So these five things are prohibited in Kali Yuga. So then the question arises then, why do devotees, or why is there sannyas going on at all? Actually, sannyas has been happening in Kali Yuga because the great acharyas have taken sannyas for the sake of preaching. Otherwise, there is no real need to take sannyas. Sannyas is very difficult in this age, and therefore in the past we see exceptional individuals accepted this difficult order to set an example so that they could go about preaching the message. Sannyas life is not meant as a life of inactivity. Anashritah karma phalam karyam karma karoti yah sa sannyasi cha yogi cha na niragnir na chakriyah. So in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains who is a real sannyasi and who is a real yogi. A real sannyasi or yogi is one who is not attached to the fruits of his activity even as he continues to perform activities. Anashrita karma phalam karyam karma karoti yah. So he performs his activities for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, but is not attached to the fruits of those activities. It's not that he is inactive or that he doesn't light the sacrificial fire, so to speak. So a person who is active on the spiritual platform, being detached, is a real sannyasi. Generally, we see, except for the few examples like Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Vishnu Swami, and several others belonging to these four Vaishnav Sampradayas, most people who have taken sannyas are from Adi Shankaracharya's line. So it was assumed that sannyas means sannyas in the Shankara line. That is the reason Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas in the line of Adi Shankaracharya. At that time, Srila Prabhupada explains in his purports in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the Shankara Sampradaya was very powerful in the society in India. And people were very influenced by this. So much so that the general opinion had become that sannyas means sannyas from Shankara Sampradaya, from the Advaita or Mayavad Sampradaya. At that time, people either were not aware or very few were aware that sannyas was also going on in the Vaishnav Sampradayas. Srila Prabhupada explains that actually much before Shankaracharya there was Vishnu Swami. Vishnu Swami is also a Vaishnava saint. He has his Sampradaya, the Rudra Sampradaya, one of the four authentic Vaishnav Sampradayas. And he had advocated also the principle of Tridanda Sannyas, which we see to this day amongst Vaishnavas. And in Vishnu Swami Sampradaya, there were 10 different categories of sannyas names and 108 actual different names for sannyasis. So Vaishnava sannyas was also going on even before Adi Shankaracharya. But because Shankaracharya became very, very influential, and his preachings and his teachings spread like wildfire everywhere over India, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas in his order, in his line, at least externally. Prabhupada explains that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas to make a public impression. Otherwise, why does a Supreme Lord need to take sannyas? Actually, even a Vaishnav doesn't, really speaking, need to take sannyas. So what to speak of the Supreme Lord then? But still, the Supreme Lord wanted to make an impression, a public impact with his sannyas, because he wanted to use that as a means for preaching and delivering those who were not respecting him because he was in the household life. So he felt that if he had not taken Shankara sannyas, Ekdanda sannyas externally, then maybe people would not accept him properly. But of course, the mysteries of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sannyas are again wonderful. In brief, He took sannyas from Keshav Bharati Maharaj, who was in the Shankara Sampradaya. His title was Bharati, and he murmured into Keshav Bharati Maharaj's ear before the sannyas diksha, "Is this the mantra that you're going to give me for sannyas?" And he chanted the mantra. And in this way, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord, he directly initiated Keshav Bharati Maharaj into Vaishnava sannyas. And then Keshav Bharati Maharaj initiated Chaitanya Mahaprabhu into that order. But for external purposes, it appeared that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken Ekdanda sannyas from the Shankara line. Srila Prabhupada also explains it in another place that Shankara Sampradaya also has many, many names. They have 10 different types of names, like titles, like Ashram, Tirtha, Saraswati, Parvat, Giri, and so on. And depending on their place of residence, or rather on the mutt to which they belong, they are given these different names. The prominent mutts are in Dwarka, in Badrinath, in Jagannath Puri, Sringeri, and so on. So those who belong to Sringeri are Bharati, Ashram, Tirtha, and so on. So Keshav Bharati Maharaj, he must have belonged to Sringeri. It was also the system that under every sannyasi there were brahmacharis, and according to the names that were given to the sannyasis, the brahmacharis had appropriate names. So for Bharati, Ashram, Tirtha, and so on, for these sannyasi names, the brahmacharis under them were given the name Chaitanya. So therefore, Nimai Pandit accepted the brahmachari name Sri Krishna Chaitanya. But Srila Prabhupada explains, he didn't accept the sannyas name. Because Prabhupada says, till the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, none of the great stalwart Vaishnava Acharyas explained why. Why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not change his name? Why did he not accept the sannyas name when he took sannyas diksha? Sri Krishna Chaitanya was his brahmachari name. So why did he not take the sannyas name? So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that because the Shankara line, the sannyasis in the Shankara line, accept or think that by becoming sannyasi, they become the Supreme Lord. Danda grahana matrena nara narayano bhavet. Become the danda, nara becomes narayana. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not at all approve of this idea. So he wanted to show that the living entity, even if he takes sannyas, is still a servant of his spiritual master. And as a brahmachari, you are still the servant of your guru. You are not lord of anything. So he preferred to keep his brahmachari name. Even though he accepted the external trappings of a sannyasi, like the saffron cloth, the danda, and so on. His intimate associate, Swarup Damodar, he did not even accept the external trappings. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita we read that Swarup Damodar was formerly known as Purushottam Acharya, and he lived in Navadvip under the shelter of Nimai Pandit. But when Nimai Pandit took sannyas, then Purushottam Acharya became practically mad. He could not tolerate that the Lord had taken sannyas, such a difficult situation to be in, and he was going to live a renounced and austere life, and he would feel separation from him. So he went away to Varanasi to take sannyas. So in Varanasi, as you know, that is the headquarters of the Shankara Sampradaya, the Mayavadis, Kashi. So there he accepted sannyas from Chaitanyananda Bharati. He was a sannyasi in the Shankara line. But he accepted his sannyas name, which was Damodar. So certain classes of sannyasis also have the name Swarupa. Like other brahmacharis have Ananda or Chaitanya. So Swarup Purushottam Acharya got the brahmachari name Swarup, and then there was Damodar. So he was Damodar Swarup or Swarup Damodar. But he did not accept the external trappings of the sannyas. Although he went through the preliminary rituals like shaving his head, shaving the shikha, and giving up the sacred thread, which the Shankara sannyasis do at the time of sannyas. But he did not accept the saffron cloth. He did not accept the saffron danda, the staff. And he did not accept a sannyas name. He retained his brahmachari name because Prabhupada explains that Swarup Damodar understood the real purpose of sannyas was simply to serve Krishna. And Swarup Damodar felt that accepting sannyas formally would become a distraction or a disturbance to his intimate or deep worship and service to Krishna. So he felt that it's better I just serve Krishna as I am. And then after he took sannyas, his guru, sannyas guru, told him, now you study and preach Vedanta. Of course, in his mind, Swarup Damodar had a clear understanding of what real Vedanta meant, because real Vedanta is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which talks about the process of devotional service to Krishna. Sarva Vedanta Saram hi Sri Bhagavatam Ishyate. So the essence of the Vedanta is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So then Swarup Damodar went to Navadvip and again took shelter of Mahaprabhu and traveled with him, eventually to live with him in Jagannath Puri. So we see that both Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Swarup Damodar accepted sannyas externally in the Shankara line, but they actually lived, practiced and propagated the Vaishnava principles because they understood that sannyas was not an end in itself. Sannyas means renunciation. So is renunciation an end in itself? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has kindly explained very clearly that sannyas or renunciation is not an end in itself. Renunciation means to become detached from this world. So, being detached from this world and doing what? Being detached from this world and being attached to Krishna. So, Mahaprabhu has explained that the purpose of detachment from the world is attachment to Krishna. And if one renders devotional service to Krishna, then automatically one becomes attached to Krishna. And at the same time, simultaneously, one also becomes detached from this world. So, the process of bhakti is so wonderful that automatically in the process of serving Krishna, the renunciation comes in. Therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has said that there is no need for a Vaishnav to accept sannyas to show that he is exalted. Rather, Bhaktisiddhanta says, a Vaishnav accepts sannyas to show that to actually exhibit humility, not pride. A real sannyasi accepts sannyas out of humility, not out of pride. And also to demonstrate a point in the society that he is in a lower position than the Paramhansa Vaishnava. Because the Paramhansa Vaishnavas, they are transcendental, they are not part of the Varnashram system, they have transcended the Varnashram system. Whereas a sannyasi, officially, is still within the Varnashram system. We see that mostly after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, hardly anybody accepted sannyas formally. Gadadhar Pandit formally accepted sannyas. He also accepted a Trirandi sannyasi disciple. I think Madhavacharya Upadhyaya, his name was. And then it is also mentioned that Gopal Bhatta Goswami later formally accepted Trirandi sannyas from his uncle Prabodhananda Saraswati, who was also a Tridandi sannyasi. But apart from that, one doesn't find in the Gaudiya Vaishnava history examples of formal sannyas till the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Rather, the Vaishnavas would accept the Babaji Vesha or the dress of a renunciant who was in the path of Bhagavat Marga. The Bhagavat Marg is a path of Krishna consciousness which focuses only on hearing and chanting. There is no other process involved, no formalities, no trappings, no external trappings. They simply wear white and they wear a loincloth and a little cloth that up to their knees, and sometimes no cloth on the top to cover the chest. At the most, maybe some light cloth. That's all they have. And they wander around. They have practically no possessions. They eat by madhukari, by going from home to home, accepting a roti here, a little sabji there. And that's how they live, spending most of their time chanting the holy names. So at the time of the six Goswamis, this was the life they lived. And even their followers, they also lived like that. Some of the followers of the six Goswamis did get married, like Srinivas Acharya, for example. But many others remained unmarried. And even their followers lived this Babaji life. Down to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Baladev Vidya Bhushan, all these great Acharyas, they lived in Braj in this spirit. However, as time went by, there was a lot of discrepancy and corruption in the Babaji community. Many people falsely accepted the Babaji Vesha, even though they were not transcendentally situated. They were very much in the grips of the modes of nature. Material desires were very strongly situated in their hearts. But in order to get some pratishtha, some prestige and reputation, puja lab pratishtha, they accepted Babaji Vesh, but they were not qualified to do so. With the result that there was a lot of disturbance in the society. So therefore Prabhupada cautions here that whether it is a formal order of sannyas or whether it's a Babaji Vesh, which is principally a renounced order of life, if one has not freed oneself from lusty material desires, one should not formally accept these orders, because it causes a great deal of disturbance in the human society. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur uses the term Markat Vairagya. Markat means restless, indicating a monkey. He explains that monkeys that live in the forest are, to all external appearances, very renounced. They don't have any clothes, not even a kopan. They don't have a house, not even on rent. They don't have any fixed place. They live on a different tree each day. They never eat the Rajbhog plate. They never eat ice creams. They eat only the roots and the berries, whatever is available. But still, they are intensely attached to sense gratification. So, they are capable of prolific sense gratification. So, the Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that those who accept formal vows of renunciation while not being qualified for it, only for the sake of deceiving the world, and whose hearts have not become purified yet by the practice of humble service to the Lord, will cause a disturbance in the society. And principally all this happens because there is unclear understanding of what sannyas really means. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the sannyas order of life, he immediately left from Katwa for Vrindavan. He moved in the direction of Vrindavan. Externally it appeared that mistakenly instead of going to Vrindavan, he went through the western part of the Ganges, which was called Radha Desh, and he eventually reached the place called Shantipur. Shantipur is the place of Advaita Acharya. So on the way to Shantipur, when he said that he was going to Vrindavan, he didn't go ahead, he came back. As he was passing through the western banks of the Ganga, he was chanting the verse chanted by the Avanti Brahman in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Avanti Brahman was in his Purvashram. Later he accepted sannyas, but when he was in his grihastha life, he was very miserly. And he would not share anything with his family members. Neither would he give any charity, neither was he benevolent towards the poor and towards others. But he was very, very stingy. Eventually, by the force of providence, he lost everything. And then his family members renounced him. Because when he had the money, he did not give them anything. He kept them deprived. So he became ridiculed by the society, rejected by his family. He had nowhere to go, and he became extremely distressed. In that great distress, he tried to spend his days here and there. But finally, a deep sense of detachment dawned in his heart. And he accepted the sannyas order. And when he did so, he chanted this famous verse, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted. And actually, that verse has now become the guiding verse for all sannyasis. Etams asthaya cha paratmanishtham adhyasitam purvatamer maharishibhihi aham tarishyami durantaparam tamo mukundangri nishevayaiva. The Avanti Brahman prays, aham tarishyami durantaparam, that I shall cross over this ocean of material existence, which is durantapara, which is extremely difficult to cross. In normal circumstances, this material existence, the ocean of material existence, is insurmountable, impossible to cross practically. But I am determined. Aham tarishyami, I will cross, I shall cross over this ocean of material existence. Tamo. Tamo refers to the material existence. How shall I cross over? Mukundangri nishevayaiva. Nishevaya eva. Certainly, by the process of service to the lotus feet of Lord Mukunda, Krishna, I shall cross over. And just in case anyone has any doubts whether this path is authorized or not, he says, yes, etam cha asthaya cha paratmanishtham adhyasitam purvatamer maharishibhihi. So the Maharishis in the past, they also situated themselves in such steady service, paratma nishtha. Nishtha means determination. Paratma means the Supreme Lord. So the great sages in the past also situated themselves very strongly in the principle of loving service to the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna. And they achieved success. So following in their footsteps, I shall also achieve success. So this is the principle of sannyas that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved. He kept on chanting this verse as he was walking down. And Kaviraj Goswami explains that Mahaprabhu approved of this idea that the real principle of sannyas was service to Krishna, dedicated service to Krishna. In one place in the purports, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, probably in the section of Chota Haridas, when Chota Haridas was admonished by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in fact banished from his association for a while, Prabhupada explains that Mahaprabhu wanted to make the point of how a renunciant must be very careful in associating with the people of this world and particularly with the opposite sex. And Prabhupada goes on to mention at one point that sannyas is not a matter of external dress. And then he says, dress is not sannyas, but the attitude of service to Krishna is. So what is sannyas? Sannyas is not a matter of wearing saffron cloth. It's not simply a matter of carrying a danda. It's not a matter of shaving the head or carrying a shikha. It's not the matter of being addressed by so-and-so Maharaj. Real sannyas, according to the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is dedicating one's body, one's mind, and one's words completely to the service of Krishna. This is real sannyas. And that is borne out by the verse earlier quoted from the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says the real sannyasi and real yogi is one who is selflessly serving Krishna. So therefore the Vaishnava sannyas is called Tridanda sannyas. Because the Vaishnava sannyasi in his danda, in his staff, he has actually three staffs, three dandas, representing kaya, man and vacha. Kaya refers to the body, man, the mind, and vacha to the words. So at the time of taking sannyas, the devotee vows that he will surrender and dedicate his body, mind, and words completely to the service of Sri Krishna. And to add to it, there is a fourth danda, which is like a small hook, and that is called the jiva danda, to indicate that not only the physical body, mind, and words are dedicated to Krishna, but the very soul is also dedicated to Krishna. So this is the real spirit of sannyas. So in that sense, therefore, whether one is externally in any ashram or whatever varna one may belong to, if one has surrendered to Krishna according to this principle, then one is also considered as good as a sannyasi. And those actually who do not accept this principle, their sannyas is not of much value. It is not real sannyas. They are only trying to be externally detached, but they don't know the ultimate purpose of that detachment or renunciation. They don't know that ultimately the higher goal is to get attached to the lotus feet of Krishna. The Mayavadi sannyasis, they have the ekadanda. They carry one danda, indicating that they want to become one with the Lord. So the Vaishnava sannyasis have no such conception. In fact, they do not like this at all. It is repulsive. The whole idea of wanting to merge into the impersonal is not something that Vaishnavas like, because that doesn't present an opportunity for serving Krishna. When you merge with the Supreme Lord, the opportunity for service is lost. So then, if any devotee who has surrendered body, mind, words, and soul to Krishna is a sannyasi, why does any devotee accept sannyas? Why did Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur do it? Why did Mahaprabhu do it? And why was there such a long gap between Mahaprabhu and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur as far as formal acceptance of sannyas was concerned? The answer is that so long as the Babaji Vesha, the Babajis were pure and practicing the Bhagavad Dharma very nicely, everything was fine. But as time went on, because the corruption became so rampant, that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had to introduce the idea of humility in the Vaishnavas. And therefore he said, take sannyas and indicate that you are still in the Varnashram. You are not like the Babajis who are supposedly beyond the Varnashram, who are Paramahansa, who have transcended everything. So Bhakti Siddhanta introduced the sannyas to the Vaishnavas to show that actually we are part of the Varnashram. We are very humble, we are very simple, we are not Paramahansa like all these Babajis, because they were artificially trying to be on that platform. So also for the sake of preaching, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, Saraswati Thakur, wanted this to be a spirit of preaching. He wanted sannyas to be taken to re-emphasize the spirit of servitude rather than lordship. And he said that by taking sannyas, a sannyasi is reaffirming his servitude to his guru and to the guru parampara and to Krishna. It's not that now he, by virtue of holding the danda, he is becoming a lord. Rather, he is actually becoming a servant. This is Bhakti Siddhanta's conclusion. For those who are brahmacharis, who eventually go on to become sannyasis, that taking of sannyas is additionally a strengthening of the resolve to continue the life of renunciation. So these are all the different reasons why externally one may accept sannyas for the sake of preaching, for the sake of delivering the people at large, because the people may respect a person in the renounced order. We do this. But we must keep both the things in mind at the same time. On one hand, the sannyas ashram, taking sannyas has been prohibited by the scripture. But the great Vaishnava Acharyas and the Supreme Lord is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have themselves done it. So it should be done under the guidance of the Guru Parampara. And even then, one has to be extremely cautious, because if one is not cautious, it causes utpat, it causes disturbance in the society. It affects the faith of not only the devotees but also of the general public. So a person in the renounced order has to be extremely careful of his dealings. Having said that, let us try to see the situation in which Srila Prabhupada expanded and spread this movement. When he was in America in the late or the mid-1960s, whom did he have with him? Nobody. He went alone. He had no money, no assistants, no servants, nobody, no pull, no influence. He didn't know any politicians. He didn't know any big businessmen. He didn't know anybody. And just by preaching on the storefront and in the gardens and the parks, somehow he attracted a group of young men and ladies who eventually took to the process. And because it was an emergency, there was a need to spread the preaching. There was a need to have a renounced class. And some amongst those who were his disciples eventually took sannyas. And because they were very young when they took sannyas, they were very immature, and also they were not very advanced in their Krishna consciousness. They came from bad cultures, and on top of it, they were subjected to the huge burden and the pressure of running a worldwide movement, of accepting suddenly so much of respect and so on. Some of them deviated from the path of renunciation. So at one time, there was one sannyasi, while on a morning walk, when there were many people surrounding Srila Prabhupada, he asked Prabhupada that what should a sannyasi do who has fallen down from this path? And Prabhupada explained immediately on the spur of the moment, better he should not live. The Shastra says, he explained all the things the Shastra says about such a person, including the Vantashi quote. And then after some time, apparently it appears that this devotee fell back in the crowd as that was surrounding Srila Prabhupada. But immediately after he said that, Prabhupada said, but actually for a Vaishnava, even if he is a sannyasi and he falls down, it's better he should remain serving Krishna, whatever be the situation. But this part, this sannyasi did not hear. And so it is said that he was never seen thereafter. And devotees feel that perhaps he gave up his body out of extreme remorse for probably what they feel may have been a deviation. So Srila Prabhupada gave both perspectives. How one must be very strict in the renounced order for one's own spiritual development, and also for the sake of the society, for the sake of preaching, to set an example and so on. And he also spoke strictly about what the consequences are of a person who deviates from the sannyas principles. Even though he was so strict in this regard, he also understood that in this age of Kali, especially the Western countries and now even India, one cannot expect the same level of purity or the standards of sannyas or renounced life that were there centuries ago. And he invoked a principle of the Srimad Bhagavatam that was enunciated by Narad Muni about devotional service. And he said, you don't worry, even if you have fallen down, it's all right, don't do it again. But be situated as a grihastha, normally fine. Even if you've fallen down from sannyas, be a grihastha, but be fixed in devotional service. Narad Muni says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tyaktva Asma Dharmam Charanam Bhujam Harer, what's that? Bhajanna Pakvona Pate Tato Yadi Yatrakvava Bhadram Abhudamushikim Kovartha Aptum Abhajatam Svadharmataha. While speaking to Vyasadeva, he says that even if he's talking about some kind of sannyas here, Tyaktva Svadharmam, if somebody has given up his Svadharma, if he's a Grihastha Brahmachari and he has taken to, let's say, sannyas or renounced order of life, Tyaktva Svadharmam Charanam Bhujam Harer Bhajan, for the sake of doing bhajan or serving the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. But if he is apakva, if he is immature, if he is still not advanced, and because of that lack of advancement, if by chance, yadi patet tato, in case he falls down from his sannyas, from his position of devotional service, still there is no harm. What is the loss? Yatra kova abhadram. What is the abhadra? What is the loss? Because whatever devotional service he has done is always eternally to his credit. This, of course, is not taken as a license for someone in the renounced order to deviate and then justify that there is no loss. Not like that. But as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, in apiche suduracharo bhajate mam ananibhak sadureva samantavya samyak vyavasito hisaha, he says that one should be firmly situated in devotional service, and if one deviates accidentally, not in a premeditated, planned way, but accidentally by force of circumstances, being overwhelmed by the modes. But if one is strongly continuing to serve Krishna and follow the principles of devotional service, Krishna says, I consider that person a sadhu. Sadhu reva samantavyaha. Samyak vyavasito hissaha, because he is situated properly. On the other hand, Narad Muni says, ko vartha aptum abhajatam svadharmataha. On the other hand, if somebody is following his varnashrama principles very nicely, but is not serving Krishna, then what is the use of his following all these principles? And then saying that, oh, these sannyasis are falling down, they are doing like this. What is the use? Yes, as a growing movement that is very, very young, and where people have been picked up from the outside of the normal world with all kinds of bad samskars, with all kinds of terrible sinful atmosphere and conditions all around, with the sense object assaulting the minds every day, if there are some casualties, although it's not good, it should be prevented, all precautions should be taken, but it's something that will happen time to time. It is expected. Prabhupada explained that when an army goes out to fight in a war in the battlefield, you can't expect that none of the soldiers will get injured. Some people will get some bullets, some will die, some will get some injuries, they will have to be nursed back to health. It's not that when a soldier is injured in the battlefield, all the other soldiers will condemn him and then shoot him. They will actually rescue him, bring him back, so that he can be nursed back to health. Same spirit holds forth for the soldiers who are fighting on behalf of Krishna against Maya, trying to further Krishna's mission. So we should also try to see it from this positive point of view. While we should be strict, while we should have all kinds of precautions, and for the sake of the larger society, sometimes disciplinary measures, yes, all these things are there, and perhaps they need to be done as well, but one should not at the same time lose that spirit of compassion and gratitude for all the service that this individual has done. So that should be the proper attitude that we can have. In that spirit, one should know that real sannyas means continuing to dedicate oneself in the service of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada here has given many, many words of caution. These should be taken very seriously. One must try to Shri Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai, Shri Shri Gopal ji ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. One should not take this thing lightly. That, well, now I'm in the renounced order, and anyway, even if I make a mistake, you know, we should accept, others should accept me in the right spirit. No. For the person who is accepting, it must be very, very seriously done. You should also consider that the disturbance that will be caused in the society is very, very great. So at the end of the day, The goal of our life is not to become a sannyasi. The goal of our life is not to become vanaprastha, grihastha, or whatever. The goal of our life is to become pure devotees of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. I was waiting when Anand Vrindavan Prabhu will raise his hand.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you very much. I was just thinking that for a householder, as you said very clearly, the main aim and goal of Krishna consciousness to get become attached to Krishna. And in some, many of the purports, in some of the purports, Prabhupada specifically mentioned also a household life is a detour. It's a detour type of a thing, but finally he has to come back on the track of renunciation. So if a householder who is in devotional life for the whole lifetime, but still that detachment has not taken place in his life, and for the whole lifetime he remains over there itself. I'm talking in a point of view of a consciousness point of view. What is the destination of that devotee who remains in the household life, externally remaining in devotional life, but internally that detachment has not taken place? What is the destination of that devotee in Krishna consciousness?
If he is doing devotional service sincerely, regardless of the fact that he may have some attachment left, he is assured of a good destination in the future. That is explained by Krishna very clearly in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Parthana yaveha mutra vinashastasya vidyati nahi kalyana krit kaschit durgatim tata gacchati. So for a person who has done good by surrendering to Krishna, there is never a question of a durgati or a bad destination. And then he goes on to say, for the Bhrashta Yogi is one who has not been able to complete or who was not able to achieve success before he leaves his body. So he will get a favorable situation in the next life to continue his Krishna consciousness. That's one aspect of looking at it. But regardless, if one has a little attachment here, little attachment there, but one is completely surrendered to Krishna by body, mind, words and the soul, one is trying one's very best for Krishna, Krishna will take care of that devotee. Being in household life, it is natural there will be some little attachment here and there. It's natural. But if one has that spirit of complete dedication and surrender, then Krishna can easily lift also. It's not a problem for Krishna to do that. So the main thing should be the spirit of surrender and dedication. And at the same time, householders must also associate with the brahmacharis, vanaprasthis and sannyasis so that that spirit of detachment can be forefront, in the forefront of the mind rather than in the background. So it keeps the focus. Yes, I'm living in household life. There are some attachments. But at the same time, I must also internally learn to become detached. So that by regular association, that becomes fixed in the mind. That is also very necessary. Okay? Any other question or comment? Yes, somebody. The mic, please. You just pass the mic there. Raise your hand, please. Where is the mic to go?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you for the nice class. I wanted to ask you that when Sridhar Swami had written his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, on Srimad Bhagavatam, and it was placed in front of the deity of Krishna, Krishna had composed a verse saying that Vyasdev understood, Sukhdev Goswami understood, whether Parikshit Maharaj understood or not, that is a doubt, and Sridhar Swami has understood. So why there is a doubt whether Parikshit Maharaj understood Srimad Bhagavatam?
Vyaso Veti na Veti va, that's the verse you're referring to, okay. Well, Actually, Sridhar Swami was a devotee of Lord Narasingadev. And he says, by the mercy of Lord Narasingadev, I have understood everything, the purports of the Bhagavatam. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has put his stamp of approval on Sridhar Swami and said that, yes, he is the authentic and the original commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Also, Prabhupada explains that Sridhar Swami was also a Tridandi Sannyasi. So, Tridandi Sannyasi was there even at that time. And Vaishnava Sannyas is there in the Bhagavatam. So, the Etamsa Asthaya verse is Vaishnava Sannyas, Tridandi Sannyas. Sridhar Swami was following the same principles. As to why he spoke like this, even about Lord Shiva, about even Shukadev, Parikshit, well, that is the bhava. It is just that out of the special mercy of Narasingadev that Sridhar Swami was able to get special insights into the Bhagavatam, by virtue of which he was able to make his path-breaking commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Any other question? Yes, Mate. Okay, mic please. Maybe you can just ask. I will repeat the question so that it saves time. Yes.
Hare Krishna, it's a very beautiful class. My little bewilderment in my mind, we often hear, and also in Bhagavad Gita we read, Karmaneva Adhikaraste Naam Maafleshu Kadachin. And also you said we should do karma and we should not accept its phal. And when we should do everything for Krishna. No, when we are doing jobs, executives, business and so on and so forth, we are dedicating everything, our mind, our activities, our efforts. But what we are, whatever we are getting out of it, what we are doing for Krishna in that respect. We are doing jobs, we are doing business. But what we are doing for Krishna, as a grihasthi, you have to do all these things.
Yes, but sometimes there are many things we do, perhaps we don't really need to do, even in household life. So even in household life, we ought to simplify. It's not that because we're in household life, it's a kind of a license to do so many things. Some degree of license is there, but it's not a blanket permit. So whatever activities that one needs to do for the maintenance of the family, the body, yes, that we have to do. And one does that with the understanding that this activity is going on so that we can maintain ourselves for the service of Krishna. The consciousness and the mentality should be there even in the process of earning that livelihood. That's the first part. We should be aware and keep reminding ourselves of why we are doing this. Second, the actual fruits of the activities should also be offered to Krishna. Our house can be used for Krishna consciousness. Our vehicles can be used for coming to the temple for Krishna consciousness. Our money can be used for Krishna service, and so on and so forth. At the same time, one can also think that Krishna has placed me in this position, and I must try to use this position to do the best service I can. Perhaps you can utilize all the facilities that you have at your disposal in propagating the message of Lord Krishna, in preaching, in serving, and so on. And it is necessary in household life. Prabhupada has given many, many instructions for household life as well. One should follow those instructions. One should regularly visit the association of devotees. One should come to the temple, one should hear, one should chant with the devotees, render seva, and in this way gradually one should practice detachment. So even in the midst of living in the material world, this detachment has to be consciously practiced from within. We should not get swayed by the circumstances in which we live and which we work. And that is possible when we are regularly associating with devotees. Today it has become a normal practice. I was talking to the brahmacharis the other day where we accept a lower standard as something that is natural and we just have to live with it. It's all right if our people see some cinema sometimes. It's all right if they go to some hotel sometimes. It's all right if they do a little this or that. The fact is, it's not all right. Although it may be in Bombay, and Bombay these things may be very difficult to abstain from, but the point is that we must talk about these things. Not to say that we should be like some kind of extremist organization that will shoot or something, but these principles must be there, and there must be some standards that must be expected even of those who live in the outside world. It should not be assumed as something that is just acceptable. It's all right to expect that somebody who is doing a job outside can go here and there, and it's all right, that compromise is acceptable. No. We should not be so easily compromising to accept standards like that. One should still try to lead as much of a pure life as is practically possible for us. One should not try to water down and dilute the standards. Cinema is not part of the program. Going out to hotels is definitely not part of the programs. Time and again, devotees come with these complaints about these two things. No, they're not part of the program. Associating excessively with one's earlier friends before one came to Krishna consciousness is also not part of the program, because that will also take us away from Krishna consciousness. Going to social gatherings that are not Krishna conscious also has to be minimized and seen where it's absolutely essential. So in the community of devotees, one must speak clearly about the standards that we must rise to. We should not be satisfied with accepting some compromised standards. Although we should be compassionate also, not that we expect everyone to do everything overnight. And even if someone is not able to, we should be kind and we should be helpful. But at the same time, our standard should be clear. We should not be satisfied or propagate compromised standards. Then it is easy to make advancement. Any other question, comment? Okay, so thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanande.